thousands drowned in the murky brew that was soon contaminated by sewage and industrial waste. Thousands more who survived the flood later perished from dehydration and disease as they waited to be rescued. It took 2 months to pump the city dry, and by then the Big Easy was buried under a blanket of putrid sediment. 1 million people were homeless, and 50,000 were dead. That was not a quote about Hurricane Katrina. It's a National Geographic article published in 2004 stating that FEMA lists a hurricane strike on New Orleans as one of the three direst threats to the nation. It was known that a major hurricane could hit New Orleans, in fact that eventually one would. So why did this disaster happen? Why did so many people get left behind? We're going to explore some of the answers to these questions, from bad political priorities, to racism and classism, to a socioeconomic system that isn't working for too many people and needs to be openly examined in light of this catastrophe. The first and perhaps easiest reason for the scope of the disaster concerns the priorities of the Bush administration, which placed the funding of the Iraq War and benefits for the wealthy ahead of basic human services and protection for its citizens. As Will Bunch, senior writer at the Philadelphia Daily News, explains, money was siphoned away from natural hazard planning. I asked Will why we're not hearing more about this in the mainstream press covering Katrina.
Well, I mean, when you say nothing was in the press, I mean, it was covered actually pretty well, in my opinion, in the New Orleans press. In fact, the Times did an excellent multi-part series in 2002 about New Orleans' vulnerability to hurricanes. However, what they found as they covered this story was that starting around 2004, last year, all of a sudden the money started drying up for a lot of these federally funded projects, which were building up or replenishing some of the levees around New Orleans. And when they asked officials about, you know, why the money was being cut back so sharply, they were very clear in saying that the changing priorities of the federal government, are particularly trying to fund the war in Iraq and also the massive expenditures on Homeland Security. I mean, the money has to be squeezed out of somewhere, and this is the type of thing that got squeezed.
And why would the Department of Homeland Security not be doing the same job with the money that was taken out of these other programs?
That's a good question. I think Homeland Security is a vast department. I don't know exactly how many it has, what, 27 different departments. And, you know, they were created because of terrorism, and I think, you know, catching foreign terrorists presumably seems to be their number one priority. And, you know, I mean, as it turns out, protecting from a hurricane is kind of the ultimate in Homeland Security, and trying to keep people here in the homeland, as they call it, safe. People died on 9/11 and people died here. So I think it's appropriate to look at the overall priorities and look at the bigger picture and, you know, what are we spending money on and what are we scrimping on, and does it make any sense?
But there are more profound reasons for the disaster. In July of 2004, FEMA conducted an exercise based on a hypothetical Category 3 hurricane hitting New Orleans. Officials participating in the exercise acknowledged that tens of thousands of people would be unable to vacate the city without government help. So the real question is, why wasn't a plan to evacuate these residents given top priority? Last year, Cuba, planning for Category 5 Hurricane Ivan, managed to evacuate 1.3 million people to safety and suffered not a single loss of life. What's different about our country that such planning did not take place? That even after the magnitude of the disaster was apparent, the media focused on what they called looting and private property? Why was their first reaction to talk about theft and violence, and even use that as an excuse for not entering the city? I spoke to Andrea of GetYourActOn.com, a grassroots organization collecting supplies and attempting to deliver it to the people of New Orleans.
Do you have any worries about whether you're going to be able to get into the city?
Yes and no. A few of my friends of mine that are closer to the city have said that some people have been able to get in that are residents. Apparently they were turning back. They were not allowing anyone into the city. I mean, there's a pile of supplies sitting in Baton Rouge, but apparently, you know, trucks and things that drove up to, you know, the National Guard post were told to turn around and go back. And I guess they're blaming some of this, you know, on the violence in the city, saying it's not safe. That's why they stopped. They actually pulled 1,500 police away from search and rescue to guard the stores. So, yeah, they were turning away supplies, and what we want to know is, you know, why were they not at least airdropping supplies in there? If they're too afraid to set foot on the streets, you know, if we can send planes to Iraq to drop bombs, how can we not airdrop food into New Orleans?
No help was forthcoming for 5 days. Citizens were breaking into stores for food and water, and a few people, a very small minority, according to reports from those on the ground, also took the opportunity to loot and express their rage. But that's not what the media showed. After initially blaming the victims for having chosen to stay behind, it then demonized them and became the voice for the most base fears of wealthy white society. An editorial in the American Daily read, "Many blacks believe that they are somehow entitled to steal. These vultures descending upon New Orleans businesses are nothing more than useless vermin and should be dealt with as such." Governor Kathleen Babineau Blanco of Louisiana said, "I have one message for these hoodlums. These troops know how to shoot and kill, and they're more than willing to do so if necessary." And indeed they are. A total of 3 or 4 people are thought to have died by violence during the lawless anarchy before troops arrived. As of this writing, troops have already killed 5 people in New Orleans, and most likely they are all African American. It's no accident that 90% of the hurricane victims are African American. A map of the city's poorest areas closely matches that of its black citizens. 34% of its households live in poverty. As Jason Flaherty writes, from the neighborhoods left most at risk, to the treatment of the refugees, to the media portrayal of the victims, this disaster is shaped by race. I would add, it is also shaped by a cultural and economic system that does not value each individual's life equally, that places the wealthy far above the poor, and that allows gross inequality to be a standard of life. What does the future hold for New Orleans? Or, as Glenn Ford of the Black Commentator puts it, will the new New Orleans be black? Will there be a new deal for New Orleans, offering employment and reconstruction and participation in community building? Or will we see what we've seen in Sri Lanka after the tsunami, rebuilding for the wealthy, a blank slate on which to pile tourist hotels and theme parks? As Ford writes, we all know that the prevailing model for urban development is to get rid of poor people. The disaster provides an opportunity to deploy this model in New Orleans on a citywide scale under the guise of rebuilding the city and its infrastructure. I hope that all of us offering help and following the plight of New Orleans will keep watch over the rights of its displaced citizens. To help grassroots organizations offering help directly to the poor and to people of color, please visit www.sparkplugfoundation.org. To offer a place to live to hurricane victims, visit www.hurricanehousing.org. For Black Box Radio, this is Chris Call.